everybody. Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today it's Laura Maison. Laura Maison is a Cuban guitarist. So we are certainly representing Cuban Scotland, huh? Last couple episodes. That's exciting. Going all over the globe here. The show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. That's S-A-V-A-G-E Classical.com. Richard Sage is over there. You know he likes to give you the best guitars on the East Coast. And you know who sent you? I did. Old Big Diaper Brett just sent you right over there, right? Gave you a little spanking and sent you on your way to SavageClassical.com, S-A-V-A-G-E, Classical.com. So Laura is an outstanding guitarist. She is a young guitarist who is just getting started in her recording career. She sent me a single recording of One Day in November. I'm not going to punish you with my Spanish pronunciation. One Day in November by Leo Brower is her sort of, I think she had one other single before this, but this one she sent sort of a press release. I listened to everything it sent to me and I connected with her interpretation of it in a deep way and got right back to her and had her on the show. Now I know that I've said that I kind of, you know, I want my guests to sort of have full length albums out, but what a full length album is, I don't know, 45 minutes, it's 52 minutes actually, Brett. Nobody cares. So just a full-length album out is what I usually like to have, but this was such a strong interpretation that I thought I would jump right on it. It's exciting. I get excited when I hear something that I connect with, and that's not all. It's usually just timing, the mood I'm in. I don't know what it is. But you know, I thought about it, and I thought, nah, you know. No, I'd rather have her on than some superstar, you know, that, you know, I can reach out to these people right now. You know, we've had a couple of them on the show during COVID or, you know, maybe one that, you know, is like just whatever you want to call it, classical guitar celebrity, if that exists. But it's just not what the show's about. Show's about this. So I'm honored to have her on. And it was, we had a super good conversation. She will surprise you with how she recorded this. You know, I talk at length about, you know, my experience listening to her. So I thought it was a good conversation. You know, people send me things all the time and I listen to everything that everybody sent and I get back to everybody in a timely manner. Like within a couple of days, if not the same day. It's not that hard to do. I know that there are people getting submissions all the time, and I feel for you guys. I understand that if you have a guitar society, the amount of submissions is overwhelming. And, you know, you want to spend that money wisely, and it takes a lot of thought and time and energy and volunteer work to run a society, to, you know, to sort of create a successful guitar studio, to run a festival, all those things. But, you know, my feeling is that it is your job and it's something that you take on. And I expect you to listen to the stuff and get back to people. and I know that you do out there. And I'm not talking to anybody in particular. I'm just saying there was one guy when I was in there's only one person that I hold a grudge against. I won't tell you who. I haven't said his name privately or publicly to anybody. Yeah, privately. What am I talking about? Of course I have. Give me two beers. I'll talk shit on this guy for 20 minutes. So anyway, you know, I was just getting started, just out of grad school, you know, just throwing my stuff around a lot like what Laura's doing right now, just trying to get, you know, trying to get people to listen to me. You know, reached out, didn't hear from him. This guy's running a festival in the United States over here. Reached out again, didn't hear from him again. This is back when I was super scrappy. I reached out to him a third time. It's third and final. That was my old rule. I'd reach out to people three times over the course of a month. And it was like clockwork when I was young. I was just so on top of it. And, you know, I reached out to this guy the third time and he told me to stop harassing him. And I just found that so, it just took all the wind out of my sails. So I wrote him back and I said, you know, that's totally inappropriate. I knew about his career. You know, he's one of these guys that won a competition when he was 12, probably, you know, got his first college job, you know, when he was 25, and everything, you know, went from there. And then there's this scrappy 28-year-old trying to get him to listen to his stuff. And I said all this to him. I said, like, you know, this is, it's so hard for us to do. It's so humiliating to put your stuff out there. And, you know, no one's listening to it. Nobody's getting back to you. For you to write me back and tell me to stop harassing you is hurtful and violently unprofessional. And he wrote back, like, I meant no offense. And I was like, you know, it's okay. It's fine. But, you know, meanwhile, he has not been on the show. I mean, he probably doesn't have any interest being on the show. He's so far up his own ass. Anyway, so that was sort of a lesson to me to be on the other side of this. And sort of just, you know, if it fits with where the show's at, you know, sometimes it's the guest. We got one guest that's one way, we got another guest doing another thing, and you might just not fit into that spot perfectly. I mean, a little bit of thought goes into this thing. There is like kind of an arc to what is more or less a season of this show, right? Is that something I can say? Is that something I can defend? Anyway, that was the case. What else am I bitter about? I don't know. There's now building permits that extend from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. They are called an after-hours building permit. They are part of New York City. I didn't know about this. I think I had heard about it on the radio a little while ago. And then I've heard it last night when I was having drinks with my friend, and I had to deal with that. Went in to the foreman, deep within the bowels of this, you know, monstrosity that they were building. I said, I'm sorry, you know, where's your building permit? He showed me his building permit. I can't believe this is on top of everything. You've got everybody in lockdown, and you're going to have people building these factories for rich jerks to live in all night long, keeping us all up. Unbelievable. And this is like so silly, right? This is like, I shouldn't be complaining about this all, considering everything that's happening, but I don't know. Thought it would just let you know what's going on here. Well, California is, I can't imagine it. You guys must be at your breaking point. It's the worst thing in the world to be a Californian on Earth right now. It just sounds terrible. Everything that's going on, everything we need to focus on, you know, we cannot drop the ball with racial equality. We're not. I'm still, you know, I've got plans to reach out to, you know, some people who are doing some things this month, September. You know, I'm trying to give everybody enough time to sort of establish what their point of view is as far as that's concerned, and then present it in a way that they feel comfortable with. That's all I can do. But I am in contact with people, and we are having these conversations. To have that going on for people in California, to have them trying to sort of figure out how to deal with those issues, to have COVID going on, to have your house, to have your home, you're told that you need to stay home, but then your home, it's burnt or is completely engulfed in a cloud of hellfire smoke. It's just, I don't know. Some of you have to be breaking, and my heart breaks for you. I'm really, really deeply saddened and sorry. I'm a Northern California guy myself, and I'm just, I wake up every day in just a very selfish way, you know? And I definitely feel bad about it, but I just, you know, I have a friend who's in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains where this stuff, I'm assuming, is just really bad. Like, I'm texting him, asking him if he wants to play Mario Kart the other day. Like, what's wrong with me? Just giving you an example of how this is just such a mess. Anyway, that's going on. And my heart goes out to everybody that's out there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you've lost your home, and I'm sorry that, you know, the natural beauty of one of the most beautiful places on earth is now, you know, forever changed and threatened. So part of the show doesn't make so much money. So part of the function of the show is for me to promote myself, right? I appreciate your patience. I really appreciate the people who've listened to my album and got back to me. I got a wonderful critique from Sergio Assad, of all people. You know, one of my favorite, if not my favorite composer for the guitar, who is, you know, continually composing. Of course, I will always love Carlos Rafael Rivera and the Whirler of the Dance. As far as like somebody who's still hitting it a lot, I'm talking about Sergio Assad. The gifts that he has bestowed upon us know no bounds. And for him to get back to me, and he said, I'll just share it with you. He said that he liked my album and he liked the pieces, and this is sort of just a little bit for you composers out there. I think a lot of people are composing. I hope that, you know, me pushing this on the show is sort of has a part in that. But he said that there were many moments in my pieces where sometimes the line got lost or the melody got lost. And he wanted me to sort of sing where I want that melody to go and then reconcile it on the guitar rather than just sort of go to the next moment that my right or left hand dictated me to go in. Does that make sense? So in more or less, I was a little too idiomatic and I didn't always follow through on where my melodies or harmonies were going in more of a musically a natural way. I thought that was a great critique and I loved it. So that is the case. If you are interested in these compositions, though, I have released my first edited score, sort of edited. I just actually posted an image of it on Instagram and I immediately was drawn to the stems going in the wrong direction in the middle of the page. And I was heartbroken. Got to go in and click those. So they're hit the old X button there. Isn't that what you do? You click it, you hit X and the stems reverse directions. So I'm going to go do that. But, you'll get that. You'll get the edited copy. Just go ahead and write me at Brett@BrettWilliamsMusic. That's Brett@BrettWilliamsMusic.com, and I will get you a score and you can do whatever you want with it. I hope you'll play it and I hope you'll send me recordings of you playing it and videos of you playing it. And, it's fall. I know everybody's looking for new music to play. This is new music. It's very, it's the piece is, that book about the fig tree, right? I believe it's the fourth track on the album, that book about the fig tree. So you can go ahead, you can listen to it. I've got the fingerings written out and you can play it. It's not the most difficult piece in the world to play. I'd say if it's got a lot in common with Julio Florida, if I'm going to say something, it's kind of like got that, it's up and down the neck. Shouldn't be too much of a problem for you. And, I hope you enjoy it. So just write me, that's Brett@BrettWilliamsMusic.com. And I'll get you a copy. We'll figure it out. You can always donate. You don't have to donate if you're a poor person. And of course, if you're a friend who's been, helping me out for years, don't worry about it at all. Just get it and start playing. It'd be my honor to have my music played by other people. It doesn't happen enough, and I'd be excited about it. Okay, so let's get on with the show. Here is someone I have a lot of respect for, a guitarist that I hope we see more of in years to come. This is Laura Maison.
So, yeah, it's like the super school where everybody wants to be and the only possibility that we have for a bachelor's. And I believe that a lot of great musicians have come out of this institution. So, yeah, it's wonderful that I can say that I went to study at the same school that I've met Dickinson and so many great Cuban musicians.
Right. And that's, I mean, you obviously, one of the things that, the reason that I kind of came across you is because you were doing sort of a press release for your new one day in November, I think is the way it translates.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Based on the movie of the same name by Leo Brower. And what's your relationship with him? Does that go back to the school in Havana? I don't know much about his history with Havana since leaving, but were you able to work with him there at that time? Or
yes, I will say that pretty much my career has been marked by the personality of Leo Brower in many, many ways. Being a Cuban and playing guitar, you have to know Leo Brower. He's like the god of guitar, and everybody knows Leo Brower in Cuba. Even if you're not a guitarist, you know, someone in the bus or in the street, you will say, you know, Leo, that guy, the guitar guy, and everybody will know him.
So they know, it doesn't matter if you're classical or not.
Exactly. No, everybody. Everybody know him. Okay. He has been a personality. He has been in TV. He's like the genius of Cuba, of the 20th century Cuba. So starting from that point, at the very moment that I decided to do guitar, I was influenced by him. And then I had a huge opportunity. When I started on the elementary school, I was only 10 years old. I remember that there was a very beautiful initiative that they came up with. And it was to create a very large children guitar orchestra that would have children from 10 years old until 15 years old, all of them playing together in a very large ensemble. And the idea was to open the Festival de Guitarra de La Habana, the Havana Guitar Festival, with that beautiful youth guitar orchestra. And it turns out that the conductor would be Leo Brower. So there I was, 10 years old, knowing Leo Brower because of the TV, because he was like very well known in my country. He was like that personality for the guitar. And suddenly, without even knowing how to play like five notes, because I didn't know anything about the guitar when I started, he was in front of me. He was teaching us. He was giving us his wonderful insights about music. And I felt so, so inspired. So that was the very, very first interaction with Leo Brower. He was with us on every single rehearsal. And that experience, that concert was really, really beautiful. Then later on, when I was at the university, I played for him at master classes. And also, I was part of the Leo Brower office.
The Leo Brower office?
Yes, he does have an office. Now it's called Ediciones Espiral Eterna, Espiral Eterna Editions, which is like, I will say, an office that handles all of his scores, his collaborations, his, I will say, the copyrights. And also that in that time in Cuba, that office created a lot of beautiful activities that enriched the cultural things in Cuba. So, for example, he will create the Festival of Contemporary Music. He will bring the most wonderful performers to Cuba. And it was a very, very wonderful experience just to have been, you know, in the office and talking with him. And he will chat about music and about his beliefs in art and how should we approach the music. It was so enlightening. So, yeah, it's been a very close relationship. And also, my aunt, she's a voice singer. She's a soprano. And she is dedicated to the opera and to the contemporary music in Cuba. And she has been working very closely with Leo Brower for several years. She was the one who, I think, did the premiere of his latest guitar and voice songs. So, yeah, in any way, there has been a relationship. And I feel blessed because of that.
And I mean, you're talking about running into him when you're 10 years old. And I mean, and even at 10 years old in Cuba, in Havana, you were aware that this was a celebrity.
Of course, yes. Everybody knows him, as I tell you. It's just, you don't even have to be a musician.
What a different
Everybody
relationship.
Everybody knows Leo Brower. Yeah. Yes.
We have here, we just don't have that here. It's just not celebrated. And I mean, you must know that just being where you are. I mean, maybe it's a little different in Miami, but what's your experience been like in Miami? I consider Miami, I've been to Miami several times and I love it. And I really consider it its own little pocket. It's its own little world, its own little country almost. I mean, and what's your experience been like there as far as like, as compared to Cuba, especially in terms of the public's relationship with art?
Oh, wow. Yes. It's very complex. As you say, it's just like a little country of its own. Yeah. It's nothing like the U.S. It's nothing like Cuba. It's just a weird mixture of both cultures, I will say.
Kind of scary sometimes.
A little.
Well, when I was there, the guy had eaten the face. The face-eating man had been. You remember that guy?
Oh, my God. Yes, yes.
So I was there right after that. And the last time. I was there like 3 or 4 times. And I just remember that kind of just being there and that element of like, oh, please, nobody eat my face.
Well, you know? Thank God we don't have face eaters anymore.
We got rid of the face eaters.
Yes.
I just feel like in hot places, sometimes, you know, you might get your face eaten.
Well, maybe because of the sun.
It's so hot.
Oh, my
but
God.
Anyway, so, you were saying it's different. It's its own world.
It is its own world. And coming from Cuba, I felt like Miami was kind of a welcoming city in the sense of, you know, there are so many people speaking my mother tongue, you know, Spanish. So, and there's so much of the Cuban culture and the Latin culture. So sometimes I feel like I am not that far away from home, you know, from the food, from the music. But on the other hand, it is incredible because it is nothing like Havana in so many senses, you know. And of course, it is more developed in so many ways, but in other ways, it's underdeveloped, I will say, in the cultural way. When I was in Havana, I was able to choose where I wanted to go for concerts because there were so many things going on. I remember every weekend, you will have the symphony orchestra, you will have a chamber festival, and you will have a guitar concerto. So you had so many options, and you had musical theater, and then you have a great play. So many cultural things happening in just a tiny city that it was like, it felt a little bit like the New York vibes in a cultural way. So many things happening all the time and at any time. So, and that's something that I was craving when I came here to Miami. You know, the cultural life is a little bit more, was a little bit more slow. And yes, and also that engagement that people had in Cuba about concerts and about going to festivals and about classical music and about being more aware about the classical guitar or the Spanish guitar, that's something that also I was kind of missing here in Miami, because I will say that the influences of the guitar here in the United States are mostly inclined to, you know, rock and to what is the folklore of the North American people.
Right.
And in Cuba, it was more prone to what was the Spanish heritage. And that was a very strong part of the Cuban folklore. So a lot of people know about the classical guitar. It's just something, you know, simple that for them to understand. So those were two things that shocked me a little. But those two things, I have to say that I believe they're improving in Miami. One thing that I have seen in these 5 years that I have been here is how much it is changing. It is a changing city, and it's a changing way of embrace the culture of a city. So I think they are doing beautiful efforts to create opportunities for the arts and opportunities for classical musicians. And I believe that there's much work to be done, no? But many opportunities are arising. So I believe that we will get to a point where it feels like a cultural city.
I mean, definitely from the perspective, from an American perspective, it's one of our more culturally rich cities. I mean, it's definitely, in my opinion, it would be easily in the top 10 as far as like just sort of the richness with which it embraces Cuban culture. You know, it's just part of, it's a really special place in the United States that I think we sort of think of Florida, us who don't live there, as sort of like a lot of people don't, you know, it kind of gets a bad name overall, but Miami, yeah. It's,
I know.
You're like, yeah, you can imagine. But, and how long have you lived there? How
long 5 years. I've been here for 5 years.
So just 5 years. So you got your undergrad at CUNY. Well, you were doing this since you were 10.
Yes.
Let's talk more about that. I know I talked a lot about it with Ahmed, so I may be covering some of the same ground, but what was your experience as a child, you know, as a musician? Were your parents musicians? Were they, what do they do? How'd you grow up?
Okay. So as a child in Cuba, I will say that I was a happy child. I will say that I was so naive, and because we lived in a family that we were kind of naive, all of us. So my grandpa, he was a very cultivated man, an encyclopedic man. He will have collections, tons of books. We'll have a room only for books at home where he would listen to music all day. He was the one who introduced me to Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Wagner. I was listening to classical music since I was a baby. And on the other hand, there was my aunt, who is an opera singer, and she was doing her bachelor's when I was born. So I was introduced to a lot of opera when I was just a baby. So those were my first encounters with music. And also there was a piano at home. There was a piano that it was drawing my attention all the time. I have a picture of myself. I think I was like 2 years old, climbing to the piano and trying to play something. So the piano was the very first instrument that caught my attention. And I started doing piano lessons when I was about 5 years old, with a very, very good composer that we had in Cuba, Maria Matilde Alea, one of the greatest Cuban composers of the 20th century. She mainly did piano compositions. And I started on the piano, but later on in Cuba, they have a system where if you want to go serious with music, if you feel like that's your career, like you want it, like that's something that you're passionate about, well, they do kind of a talent discovery process where they, I would say they run like a contest where the children go to the music schools and they have several tests for a week where they do, I would say music theory test. They do physical tests to see if you have like the physical conditions for the instrument that you want. It's a very difficult process for a kid.
How does that work? Can we rewind just a second and talk about the test for the physical abilities in order to play piano? So how
that's
does that
so
work?
That's so fun. Because I decided that I wanted music when I was a little bit late, because if you wanted piano, you needed to do all of those tests when you were 6 years old. If you were past that age, then you wouldn't have the possibility of choosing piano. And I was already 9 years old, but I knew that music was my thing. I felt so weird at school, because in the normal school, I will talk about Bach and Beethoven and this, and I'm learning this piece, and the other kids, of course, wouldn't get it, because they were not into that world of music that is so unique. And, you know, we have our own language. So when I knew that there was a school where the kids actually knew of that stuff and they will learn even more, I wanted to be part of that. So what they do is that the parents go to the music school and they sign you up, and then they run tests on you for like a week, talent test. They will see if you're able to sing, if you're able to keep on the rhythm, if you are able to...
So just raw talent tests, like you haven't
exactly
been trained.
Exactly, many talent tests, but they don't need training, I will say. It's just more about seeing if you're musically inclined or not. How is your musicality?
That would be people like you're saying with the sight singing ear training is what we call
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
But it's a matter of being able to keep pitch.
Exactly.
Match
you need
tones.
To keep the pitch, match the tones. And you also had to be able to do polyrhythmic exercises. It was very complex, in fact. You had to sing and do something with your feet and then do different rhythms with your hands. So it was an entire process. And every day they will, you know, select just a few kids, and the ones that succeeded at the end of the 7 days, you know, they will be the one chosen to be part of that school. And you will start then having your normal classes, you know, the ones that every kid has, math and language and science and this and that. And then in the afternoon, you have music classes. You will have your guitar class, solfège class, which is sight singing and ear training, and music appreciation, music history. Wow. Just being a kid, you were involved in that. It was an amazing experience. So that's how I started. So I wanted to do piano, but it was way too old. And the only possibility was guitar and voice. And I always remember that it was just pure luck, I will say. I knew the guitar just a little because of Leo Brower and the things that we saw on TV. I had never seen a guitar in front of me. We didn't have a guitar at home. I had no idea how to play. And I went to the school and they run the physical test. So for the physical test, they will watch your hands and see the length of your fingers and your body. And if you were tall and if you could embrace the instrument. So, and they gave me a big guitar. And
yeah, I was gonna ask. Did they give you, there were no half-size guitars?
Yes, no. It was like a big guitar, like the one that an adult would play. And they said, okay, well, you have to grab this like this and then put your arm here and this and that. And I felt so weird because, you know, that the classical position is not the most comfortable in the world, especially if you're a kid and the guitar is huge. But it turns out like they saw that I had the physical conditions for the instrument, and they decided that guitar was the thing. And I remember that I didn't know anything about the guitar. I wasn't at the moment, I wasn't aware of what was I gonna play but one thing I liked the school. For me, it was a beautiful school, and I made two friends, so that's okay for me. So
basically, and it was a beautiful school, like the actual grounds were
it was a
lovely.
Beautiful, beautiful school. I still remember it as a magical place. It was nothing like the normal schools in Cuba. Mm-hmm. It will have, it was made for art. So it was a beautiful, I would say, architectural creation. It had beautiful grounds. It had trees. It had fountains. It was kind of a magical place for music. Yes, I had the best moments in that school. So that's how I started with the guitar. It was just, like I said, it's destiny. It was just without knowing, without looking for it, it just came to me.
Well, definitely. And what happens to the kids who don't get in?
Nothing. I mean,
because in this country, basically, we just tell them that they're doing great, you know, no matter what.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that in Cuba doesn't happen. I have to say, yes.
Yeah, what do you think about
that? The level of, I would say, the training that we received being so young, it was so, so high. We're talking about a level like the Russian ballet or something like that. Yeah. It's top, top, top. So if you didn't make it, you made it out of school. It's not like you're doing fine and you're not. It was really, really, I will say, severe, but at the same time, it made us stronger, and I think it developed our musicality and all of our qualities as kids, you know? Mm-hmm. So for the kids that didn't made it to that school, it's okay. So they will just have to, you know,
do something else.
Not just go to normal school with the other kids. And I think that there were opportunities sometimes when they opened for some kids that were not able to enter at the time, but did had some of the requirements. So I think that happened also to the other kids. But normal school is okay. In normal school, you'll go to school and have all of your
Learn
subjects.
Your guitar
in.
If you want. Yeah.
And if you want, exactly. And if you wanted, you will have your guitar lessons with a professor. But the school that we were, you know, we were into, that music school, it was like a talent school. So it will be very, very strict and very, very focused on the music.
So you go there and then, you know, you leave 5 years ago. You were there until 5 years ago. I can't really, I mean, I don't want to ask your age directly, but it seems like you're young, but you know, like you're not 20, maybe you are, I don't know, but it's like, I can't really tell with people.
Yes. I'm 29. So 20, no.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I lived in Cuba for 24 years. Mm-hmm. And I did all my previous career in Cuba, where I was able to develop not only as a guitarist, but also as a musicologist. Mm-hmm. And I also did my...
Is that true? So you had a degree in musicology as well?
Yes, yes. I had my bachelor's in musicology and orchestra conducting.
Wow. Okay. Yes. I loved conducting class. I really, really liked it.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
What a great experience.
But you know how, it's like, I don't know how it is there, but here, you know, you take conducting, but then that's it. And then you feel like you can only be a guitarist because it's so demanding, at least.
Exactly. There's a point where you have to choose because, you know.
But look at Brouwer. I mean, he was a conductor in Spain I think he still is, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I could have the opportunity of conducting again, that would be awesome. But sometimes you have to focus, especially when you're coming to a new society, a new life. You have to focus so you can, create your path. So you can find your path, and then maybe why not to continue exploring all of the other elements of music, you know? But I decided that I needed to focus on the guitar, especially after I got the scholarship to be able to do my master's in classical guitar. And so far,
Could
have gone anywhere.
It's close to home. I mean, there's definitely
that. Well, that was one thing. And the other thing is, I believe that the United States is a wonderful country for developing a career. There are so many opportunities that you don't see in other places.
Right.
And the other thing was, well, as you said, Miami is not as far from home. Right. And that opportunity was really interesting for me because it will take me out of my comfort zone totally. I will have to speak in another language. I will have to explore another way of living, another system of living. And for me, it was wonderful. I will be forever grateful for that opportunity that opened so many paths for me.
And when you came, so you came here 5 years ago. So at that point, Cuba had been opened up. It was more or less you could just kind of come here and go back, no problems, right? So you didn't struggle with any of that. But what was your parents' sort of relationships with what was going on there politically in the 80s and 90s?
Well, my dad was already living here in the United States.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And my mom's still in Cuba. The relationship with the things, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, we were all very naive. My mom.
That is what you said. Yeah. That's
yes. Right. We were living in a, you know, my aunt is an artist. So my grandpa was the counselor for the embassy of Portugal in Cuba. So we were all intellectuals. We were living into our own little bubble.
Yeah.
So I will say that I never knew anything politically, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No.
You were just so focused on your art since 10.
I think we will live in a bubble at home,
right.
Probably. And then, yes, just the music. That was another bubble, the micro bubble.
One of the things that is interesting about your career so far is the way that you release music. Now, on this show has been around for like about 8 years, 10, maybe going on 9. And at the beginning, sort of one of the things I wanted people to do was sort of have a full length release. And I'm not saying that this was a problem with you at all. It's sort of an amendment that I'm making these days, because it is possible for us to release one thing. And you do have several pieces that you've released as videos. What is it like now with releasing music that is not a full length album? I mean, do you have a goal to do that? Or is it sort of like what's going on in Spotify right now, and especially in the pop music world, is that people aren't coming out with full albums. I had an album that you were very kind about that came out. It was Nafa. It was 25 minutes long. And I was real nervous about it. I was like, should I be doing this? And I talked to the guy who produced it, who's younger, and he's in his 20s. And he was like, you should absolutely do it. is that this is the way it's going. But what are your feelings about that as far as like the way that, you know, you plan to release music?
Okay, well, first of all, congratulations on your album. I was listening to it, and please, please, I want to play your music. It's really amazing. And one thing that I loved is that, well, the titles are so catchy and unique. That's one thing that is just, oh my God. And they're humorous, you know, I love them. And the other thing is that there are so many colors in any, it's like characters. They all have their unique personality. So I love it. And the last one of the album, I love it. Totally love it. It's so beautiful and it's strong and it has personality. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much.
I mean, kind of a review, but I just had to express myself. And
I really appreciate that. Thanks.
No, really great job. And I believe, yes, in these times, a lot of people are just releasing singles instead of all albums. But I think that the two things are able to, you know, make it great. Yeah, exactly. Into the music world, into the music industry. I myself have the goal of releasing a full-length album on which I have been secretly working. Oh. I have to say it. Yes, yes. I have been working on it for like 4 months and I still have some, I think, like 4 tracks to record yet, because you know, we are very demanding when it involves recordings. We never like what we do. Whenever we listen to ourselves, it's like a torture. We're so demanding. So I will say that we set the bar super high. So that's why it takes so much time to record an album, a full-length album. So what I did is that I decided to start growing awareness about my music on Spotify, in spite of the fact that I don't have a full-length album completed yet. You know, I'm still working on it. But in these little pieces, especially Romance was like the first trial. I just said, you know what? Let's just see if this works. Let's just do it. Let's just take it out to the world and see what people do. Like if I get one listener, I will be happy. So that will be, and it turned out well. It came out in February. And I think that now it has about 6,000 streams.
I can't believe how many streams. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's been a surprise. It has been a surprise for me. And I said, well, it seems like this is something that I could do. So Un Día de Noviembre was meant to be part of the album, but I decided to release it as a teaser. So it might be included in the album or it might not be included on the album, just to kind of give people a sense of what the album will be about. And it's also a song that I had recorded since like 2 months ago. Right. It was already at the point where I was able to listen to it, you know, that we're so hard on ourselves. And I said, you know what? This song has such a story behind it that it has so many things in common to the reality that we're living now, that this might be the perfect song for this COVID times, you know, for this moment in history that we're living. So why not to release it? So I decided that, yes, I will take the chance and I will just release One Día de Noviembre, because this song, it's a beautiful, it's a little bit nostalgic and I would say a little bit melodramatic, but it's also a song that calls for a deeper understanding of ourselves, for a look inside. And I discovered while I was, you know, recording the songs, you know, that we do a lot of research about the composer and the time that the song was created, so we can do a better interpretation of the music, not only the notes, but the whole message that it unveils when we know the story. So I was digging in and I found that this was not just a random guitar composition that Leo Rauer came out with, but it was part of a soundtrack. It was part of a soundtrack of one of those leading Cuban films of the 70s that was by the director Humberto Solas, and it had the same name as the song. And it wasn't even originally for classical guitar. It was just for an ensemble that will have guitar, contrabass, it will have percussion and flute, I believe. So it was like four instruments, not a solo composition. Mm-hmm. And the thing that captured my attention was that this film was a film about a man who gets sick. And he has just a few days or months to live. And he starts to examine the world inside him and the world around him, you know, asking very existential questions about the meaning of life, about the meaning of the lives of the others. And it's really a very strong movie about taking a look inside. And I believe that in these times where we are socially distanced, where we have being in quarantine for so much time, we had to take that necessary look inside. I believe many people had the time to think about themselves and their lives and the path they are taking and I think evaluate what they are doing. So it all, you know, it all had meaning for me. So I said, this is the perfect song for embracing this moment. This is like a musical gift for this moment in people's lives, in the world. So that's why it came out.
And I think you build it as a meditation.
Yes, exactly. Right,
which grabbed my attention. And then when I listened to it, I've heard this song many times. It was the most outstanding interpretation I've ever heard of it. It was just outstanding. And I really was like, let's just do it. Let's just have her on. Because I was like, there's something that you tapped into with it that I don't hear many people get. First of all, your phrasing is just so open, and you really aren't afraid to stretch things out in ways that I find so refreshing. And it does seem, especially with the middle section, where it goes into a different key. I forget. Exactly,
yes, to the major key, yes.
That usually is not balanced very well. And in your case, you're able to give it its own character, and it had this separate sort of energy, but it maintained the same level of focus, which is so hard as a player when you're playing Piazzolla or something like that, where that happens too, where you have these two very contrasting moods in the same piece. Mm-hmm. And you know, people aren't always writing like that anymore. I certainly don't. I kind of keep things level the whole time. But at the beginning, when I first started writing, I didn't. I would sort of have a couple of things because I thought that's what you did. You went from minor to major and things were different. But you were able to sort of just balance and reconcile all the building blocks of this piece in such an interesting way that I really wanted to have you on, because I was like, I think that this is an interpreter of, tremendous depth. And I know that everybody's going to just say, look, listen to these two just blowing smoke up each other's ass. I'm glad you liked my stuff, but I'm really liked yours. And it shows that you had done the work and that you found something relevant to say about what's going on right now. And you were able to connect it to the piece. And I wish that more interpretive artists would do that kind of work that you're doing, would sort of find, a statement that can be made, whether it's implicit, whether it's obvious, it doesn't matter, but a statement and a mission and then attaching it to that interpretation is so important. And I think it's something that's going to make what we do more relevant.
Thank you so much. You know, right now I have, yeah. I'm emotional on everything.
I bet you are, right? It's a very emotional time for all of us. So
yes. And thank you, because when we have such high standards, so for us, it's never too good. For us, it's never good.
But yeah, that's the truth.
What I try to do with my recordings is to be as real and as, you know, true to myself as I can. So that's what I do. I try to find a connection. I always said a deeper connection with me, and that connects also the composer's ideas and the moment and everything. and try to find my own message within the music, just to be able to deliver, because people will like it, people will not like it, but I have to feel like I said my truth. Otherwise, I will feel like I'm just faking it. Like it's not real music for me. It's not something that is coming from myself. And I remember that I recorded this during quarantine.
That's what I was going to ask, is sort of like, what is it that you, what sort of, you know, everybody listening to this is a guitar player, but what is it? What sort of things did you incorporate in order to get yourself to the point where you're able to interpret in such a deep and meaningful way? Like, what was it? What was happening? You're about to say it. I kind of interrupted you.
No, don't worry. Yeah. Well, I believe that I did the research about the song itself and the moment that it was created. And for me, it was quarantine in Miami, and we were, you know, stuck at home, and it felt so weird. And I felt like everybody was craving for connection, and we were playing. We were feeling disconnected and alone and uncertain, and so many awful and sad things were happening, the sick people, the deaths. And it's one moment where we feel very connected to humanity, and we feel connected to our humanity and to looking inside. So I was in that mood already. And yeah. When I read about the movie and I saw the movie itself also, and that sense of existential, you know, questions, and that kind of digging in inside of ourselves, it really got me inspired. I have to say that. And I remember that it was an afternoon here, and I already had the idea of how I wanted to make it sound, you know, that I wanted that contrast to be contrast, but I don't want it to be absolutely detached with the first section in minor, because I believe that it's all part of an idea, all part of a story. I created my own story with it, you know, like we go from the nostalgic times, we try to find the light, and then, you know, all that romanticism. Yes, I did it on my mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and I remember that I was working on that and how I wanted every part to have a life, but be part of the same story. And I'm thinking about the movie and thinking about delivering a message of hope and all of that. And just, I remember I was trying to record it, and you know that we record so many times. I like to record full length. I don't like to go piece by piece or part by part. Mm-hmm. I just do it like if I was in a concert. Otherwise, it doesn't work for me. I am not as good as editing, you know, so it wouldn't work. Okay. I'm new at this, so I do it all by myself. And I decided to go full length with this one too. And that day I was really connected with myself. I have to say, it was one of those days where you feel all the weight of the world upon your shoulders. You just want to things to improve and to deliver a message of hope. And it just, you know, it just came like that. I still have the file that says Un día de noviembre, one take, magic, because that's what happened. Yeah. If I have to rationalize what I did, I will have to tell you, I really don't know what happened, but I believe that it was just a moment where all of those things collided. The emotional exploration, knowing the things about the music, and also the moment in history that we were living. So if there's one thing that captures this moment for me, is this song.
Right. And it had to come out. And that's sort of the point. That's what I felt when I heard it. You know, because we do get a lot of, you know, not we, but anybody, these things sort of float around, these press releases. But you know, and I listen to everyone I can, but everything. But it's to your point though, it really is about kind of being available when that happens. And the fact that you can record yourself, and you recorded yourself, is that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What's going on there? How was that experience from a technical level? I mean, for me, it was hard.
Yes, it is hard. I have to say it is hard because, you know, as musicians, I'm speaking about myself, okay? I am not as, you know, technology savvy as you would say, but at the same time, the world is changing.
Yeah.
And this is a new normal, like they say, and everything's is changing and we need to adapt. And one thing that I learned in Cuba is that we need to adapt to survive. So if that was what was needed, and I still wanted to make music, but we cannot go to recording studios, I decided to take hands on and just do it myself. I didn't even have very good gear. I just only have my Blue Snowball microphone.
That's crazy. All done with a Yeti Blue Snowball microphone. It's like $120 max.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I had a Mac computer and GarageBand, and that's all.
Unbelievable. So one microphone.
Yeah, and that's all. And recording it in my bedroom, that's all. When you want to do music, I believe that, you can do it better. But if you want to do it, you just do it with whatever you have. You don't have to have the best guitar in the world. You don't have to have the best gear in the world. You just have to have the desire of doing something and putting it out there. So I decided to just give it a try.
It's 100%. It was, wildly successful. So what else do you have? So you're obviously going to be doing the rest of the song, or the rest of the album, and you're going to be doing, did you have your tracks mastered or did you master those yourself?
Well, I did it myself. Basically, the mastering process, I think the only thing that we do that I did.
Yeah.
Well, very basic, like I said, it just GarageBand.
GarageBand, not even Logic.
No, correct, man. So I would just try to equalize everything.
Yeah.
And that's all.
That's it. Equalize.
That's it.
Amazing. So there's no reverb or anything? It's nothing?
A little bit of reverb because my bedroom is very dry. Uh-huh. That's why I choose it, because there's no, background noises or anything.
Right.
But sometimes it can sound very dry. So just a little bit of reverb and a little bit of equalization, and that's all. That's my mix and master process.
Oh, sorry about that. I was recording, and this will probably go into the recording, but all of a sudden, another track started blaring in my right ear while you were talking.
Oh, my God.
Right there. Hey, it happens. It's part of the fun here. But anyway, the mastering process, all that stuff. I mean, it basically really is just about the integrity of the performance. And do you have any performances going on coming up soon? Are you trying to do any of the online performing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had various concerts coming up. I was going to do a little tour in Latin America. I was going to Boston and New York. Ugh. But unfortunately, because of the COVID situation, everything has been postponed. And we really don't know when are they going to happen. So I was waiting to see how it turned out, but it is what it is, and it feels like we will be doing a lot of online concerts from now on.
I think
it feels like that's the way that it's gonna be for a few months, and I have to embrace it. So I will have very soon a concert with Group Moose that I'm working on, and there
with
will
who?
Be
what's that?
Group Moose is like
Group a, Muse. That's
yes,
right. Group,
exactly. Yes. And I will have a coming concerts by myself, and then another one that is sponsored by an agency that is called the BIG Agency. Mm-hmm. So we'll have some surprises coming up, and I will do a lot of live streaming too. That's one of my plans to do little gatherings with fans and questions and answers, just to feel connection with them and, to deliver music. Because one of the most wonderful things that happened when we perform is the interaction with people.
Yeah.
We're able to deliver something that is precious to them and that they really enjoy. And we're delivering an experience, but they also deliver so much love to us and so many things that make us stronger and makes us, be able to keep on going despite of how hard this path it is. So I believe that this connection is not only from the musicians to the people, but from the people to the musicians too. So that's something that I miss a lot and that I'm looking forward to reconnect with. So yes, I will be working in online concerts mainly. And when the concerts return, I hopefully will be able to do my tour and to go to Boston and New York. And yes, and so far I will be releasing another song very soon. Mm-hmm. And this one will be from the Latin American repertoire. I won't say much, but I believe this one will be more uplifting.
Well, that one was uplifting in its own way, but this one will be what? A little more fun upbeat. And dancing.
Yes, upbeat. A little bit more upbeat. We'll say it like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Laura. I had a wonderful time speaking to you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to your amazing podcast.
Oh,
it was a wonderful opportunity.
That does it for my time with Laura. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I will see you next time with Bradford Werner. Bradford Werner of This Is Classical Guitar is joining me. We had a wonderful discussion. I've been wanting to talk to him for a long time, so because of the new format that we're using, the online-only interviews, I was able to sort of reach out to him. Big, exciting conversation there. And, of course, thank you, Laura, for coming on. I'll see you guys next time.